Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Let the truth
set you free.
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
No. I am the father.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
Hasta la vista, baby.
Hello and welcome back to the Creative Control Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Kenan, and thank you for joining us on today's episode, episode 59. From the Creative Control team this week, I have Sasha, Lee, and we have a double act here in terms of Alex and Rita together. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Very good, thank you.
Okay. Yes. This week's episode, we're going retro again. So if you haven't already checked it out, one of our previous episodes, we did our top 10 films of 1980. So this time we're moving on to 1981. So we are talking the top 10 films of 1981. If you're not familiar about how we do our top 10 list here, basically we sort of like do a round robin where we all go around and give a movie until we get our top 10. And then we're going to go through a couple of the lists and that we've generated separately and think that there's anything else that's missing that needs to make that and debate it to whether that should happen. I've also got a list from Neil and Greg, who they sent it through to me as well. So I'm going to be sharing them out, their list as well. So in the way that we did the releases, so to make it fair, what I've done is I've basically done the release dates as the US domestic box office. Reason being is those statistics are much easier to come by and look up. So we're doing the release dates of those. So, you know, it might have been released in sort of like 1980 in the US, but it might have not been 83 to the UK or 82. So that's the way we're managing it. So it's going to be US domestic release of 1981. So if you guys shout out a film and it's not on my list, I'll just double check it, see when it's released, see if it makes the cut. Thank you if you're here watching and listening. And if you haven't already, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe button to our channel on YouTube. And if you're listening to us on our podcast, make sure you follow our podcast on all the major podcast platforms, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Audible. We are on all of them. So now we'll move on. So let's start off with our number one pick. And I'm going to go to Rita first. What is your pick going to be, the first film of our 1981 top 10 movies?
So I feel like this is going to be everyone's number one, or I would be very surprised if it isn't, but Raiders of the Lost Ark has got to be.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. It has to be. Mm-hmm. It has to be. So why have you put that down?
It's just a fantastic film. It's epic. I think it stands the test of time. We've obviously had, like, recently, the most recent Indiana Jones, which was enjoyable but average by comparison. You just can't beat the original ones, and that in particular has always been a favorite, I think. And for someone who was not born yet at the time of 1981, there aren't many films of this year that I've seen, but that is one I've seen a few times, and I will continue to watch a few times. So
I mean it's got to be on all of our lists, right? Alex, is it in your number one spot?
It is my number one spot as well. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Lee, I suppose it's on your list.
Yeah, number one spot, really. Yeah. I never forget the first time I saw that boulder like rolling down towards him. I just thought, what the hell is this? It was brilliant. Yeah. Just everything about it. Just action, comedy, adventure. Like, yeah, all the casting, brilliant. Like, yeah, it's just an awesome film. Like, for it's way ahead of its time back then, you know. It's, it's great.
Yeah, and as Emery says, it's stayed the test of time as well. Sasha, tell us about your love for Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's one of the best films ever made, hands down. The only film of the action-adventure genre that deserves that praise. It's the granddaddy of all. It gave birth to video games like Tomb Raider, Uncharted. Everyone's looking for an Indiana Jones-inspired thing, inspired movies like Brendan Fraser's version of The Mummy. You know what I mean? That's just it. Indiana Jones is the OG. And the best thing to ever happen to come out of James Bond, in my opinion, because that was just it. It was a conversation with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. And Steven Spielberg was butthurt because he was like got turned down because the Broccolis didn't want him to direct a James Bond movie, something he always wanted to do his whole life because he was a big fan of James Bond. And literally, George Lucas was like, I got something better. It's called Indiana Smith. And like, literally, Steven Spielberg's like, what is it? He pitches it and he goes, that's amazing. I love everything except for the last name. He's like, what would you call it? Indiana Jones. And that's how it was born, man. That's how it was born. Right after Star Wars, they were chilling in Hawaii. George Lucas didn't want to watch the box office grosses of Star Wars because it was predicted to be a mega bomb. And then they came back with Indiana Jones. But then Lucas came back and realized he was a multimillionaire. So, you know.
And the legend of...
I personally love all the Indiana Jones entries, including the rubbish ones. This one, this latest one, you know what? I personally think the last 15 minutes made that movie dog shit. However, everything leading up to the last 15 minutes, I enjoyed thoroughly. And that was mainly because Harrison Ford has still got it at 8 years old. At no point did I disbelieve that he was the character. At no point, even in bad ones, does he ever phone it in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like he's great in that role, and I don't want him replaced. I'm Team Ford, motherfuckers. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no recasting. Yeah, yeah.
No recasting. It's done.
If you have to recast, frankly, you just need to stop making the series because.
I'd CGI him. I don't care what anyone's debate is on CGI. I know exactly what I'd do with that shit.
We'll have to do another follow-up to Indiana Jones What Next, because we've done one very early on before obviously this last film came out, so we're gonna have to do a follow-up on that now. And that'll be an interesting chat. Okay, so Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, it's there. It's going to be number one, I think, for all of us as well. Even though this is a top 10, we're not really going to rank them, but that's clearly going to be number one. Same as Empire Strikes Back was clearly number one for the 1980 releases. Okay, let's move on to the second pick. I'm going to throw in my film for the second pick. This is probably going to be on everyone's list as well. It is Superman 2. So... this, Christopher Reeve, the GOAT Superman, don't care what anyone says, he's the best to do it, hands down. Terrence Stamp as General Zod, it's a great movie. And, you kind of get a bit of a decline after two in terms of three and four. But the story behind number two is almost as exciting as what happened on screen, because there's so much that happened in the background. So the original director, Richard Donner, filmed about 75% of this movie when he was doing principal photography for the first Superman. So he was kind of filming parts one and part two together. And the producers said, look, we need to shift the filming now to the first Superman so we can get that release and get it out there. And then we'll come back, we'll do the reshoots and the pickups to complete part two. But then there was a sort of like a falling out between Richard Donner and Alexander Salkind, who basically bought the film. Salkind, thank you, Sash, who bought the film rights to the character. And they brought on Richard Lester as a co-producer to start with, to kind of be the go-between between them, because they just weren't on speaking terms. And eventually Salkind basically got rid of Donner, brought in Lester to complete the film. Gene Hackman, our respect for Donner, didn't return to do his pickups, so they had to use a body double and a voice actor to complete some of the scenes. Lister, he basically inserted a lot more slapstick humor in it. He filmed the new opening, which was the Paris scene. He filmed the fight in Metropolis, and he put in the hypnotic kiss for Lois so she could forget that Clark was Superman, because the crux of this movie is that Superman decides to give up his powers to be with Lois. She finds out who he is, and then obviously he has to get the powers back to defeat Zod and his cronies. But then obviously years later we had the Richard Donner cut, and Sasha might be able to tell us more about that in terms of his preference. But Superman 2 made me believe a man could fly again. So that's there. Did anybody not have it on their list?
So I can say technically I didn't, because it's not good enough to be on my list. I think I just totally forgot it was that year. So
That's fair.
I'm absolutely out of mine as well.
Alex, your thoughts on Superman?
Yeah, it was also my number two. As a kid, I probably preferred it more to the first Superman, just because I liked Terrence Stamp as General Zod as a kid.
Yeah, because of the action. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've always been more of a fan of villains, and I've never been a Superman guy per se. You know, when it comes to the characters, I've always been more of a Batman guy than a Superman guy. So yeah, I was always drawn to the idea of Zod, and yeah, I just thought Terrence Stamp was awesome. Got the chance to meet him a few years ago at Con as well, and Neil.
Nice. Before
him. Superman 2 is just an awesome film.
Did you? Did you know it before him?
Yeah. I went up to the table to get the autograph, and I knelt down in front of it.
Brilliant. Absolutely love that. 100%.
Excellent.
Look at Sasha's smile. I love his smile.
Sasha, obviously, Superman 2 is going to be on your list. What was your preference, the theatrical release or the Richard Donner cut? Do you have a preference?
Well, Superman 2 is actually way down on my list. It's actually number 6. And that's mainly because I never liked Superman 2 until the Richard Donner cut. Even as a kid, I was like, why is he throwing an S out of his chest? Superman has no powers like that. This movie sucks. Yeah. it's like you're a kid, you grew up with you're reading the comic books and stuff, and you're like, where are these extra powers coming from? And I know like he had all these crazy powers prior the 1980s Silver Age of comics kind of thing, because mm-hmm. it was like, what power shall he have next week or whatever? But yeah, that first movie really grounded into what Superman should be and the powers he should really have. And like, you know, when they revamped the comics in the 80s, I don't know whether I'm telling this correct, but I don't remember no magical mm-hmm. shield from his chest. I don't mm-hmm. remember no date rape kiss. that theatrical cut, yeah, it's that nostalgia thing where it was great mm-hmm. when we were kids and we didn't know better, but when you watch it now, it's like, is it good? Like, mm-hmm. is it? It was the beginning of the campiness, because Donna did get...
There's a lot of slapstick in there.
And there was a lot of slapstick humor put in. And then when we finally got the Richard Donner's cut, like 20 years later, 25, whenever the hell it came out, it was like, holy shit, this is what this should be. So I'm pro the... And the bear rug, man. Like, come on, dude. I'm not even going to spoil how she finds out how Clark is Superman in the Donner's cut. If you haven't seen it, it is the smartest thing Lois Lane has done in the history of Lois Lane things that she should have done. Like hands down, how she finds out Superman is Superman for realsies in the Donner version of the movie is like you watch Smallville, you watch Lois and Clark, you read the comic books. That's good writing, what they did there. Okay. And what was the best of it, and I'm still not saying what happened, they always made Lois in control of that scene. She had the upper hand the whole time, and it showed that she was a smart reporter and not a dumbass that everyone takes her for. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can kind of believe it. Like, you look at that first film, if you rewatch that first film and you see her with Clark, right? Everyone's like, the glasses off, blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right. I could see through that. Can you really? Because here's the thing, when Christopher Reeves comes in as Superman to her, all right, for the first time, state of shock. I'm talking about a different film, but bear with me here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, state of shock. She almost fell out of a damn helicopter, all right? Mm-hmm. So she faints, right? The second time she sees him, he's Superman. He's flying out the sky. She ain't got no time to pretend what he looks like and shit like that. My man's all muscular and shit. He's flexing. He's flirting. She's flirting. She's like, what kind of underwear am I wearing? And he's like, pink, like 5 minutes later. And she's like, oh, shit. Yeah. And she's blushing. She's smitten. He's balling, you know what I mean? Clark's like, when Clark shows up later in that scene, like, she's like, yeah, whatever, Clark, you know what I mean? Because she's fucking lusting after, so she just went for a fly. Okay. She went on the best date she ever had. All right. She's smitten. So it isn't until the end of the movie when Jimmy goes, hey, they're never there at the same time. I wish he was there to see all of this. And she's like, yeah, they're never there. They're never fucking there. Why is that? He's the fucking guy. And she, it's not a dumb move. It's not a dumb move on Lois. Not at all. Not at all. At no point in that film, in those first two films, do they make her be or felt dumb. And that's the...
No.
And coming back to that scene, you got to understand, the whole of the Donna cut, she's on to him. She knows he's Superman. She's waiting for him to slip up. So when she does entrap him, you know what I mean, for to come out, because before in the original cut, it's not her playing him. It's I fell over a bear rug. You know what I mean? Like literally, my hand went in the fire. Oh, there you go. I'm Superman. I didn't get burned. You know what I mean? It's what kind of horseshit is that, man? So that's ultimately why this version, the theatrical version, is lower down my list. But it's still a kick-ass movie. But you know what I mean? Like, right, like if cool, it was if the Donner's Cut came out in 1981, it would probably be, you know what? It's a fight between that and Raiders, if I was to be honest. As much as I like Raiders, I've seen Superman 2 more. You know what I mean?
Wow, okay. Especially that's in recent
years. So in recent years, I think growing up, Raiders was my go-to film for the longest time. Mm-hmm. But when you've seen a film about a billion times as a kid, you kind of save it for special occasions. Whereas Superman wasn't really as watched because I didn't have the VHSs. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Lee, I don't know how you follow that, but you like Superman? Yeah, okay, thumbs up.
I was a big fan of Superman too. I think obviously that the fight scene along the street is brilliant. I just think, again, that sort of that age when you're seeing that happen, it just blows your mind, you know.
Yeah,
that was sort of like when effects started really taking off. And it was just so well acted, it was so believable at the time. When I was a kid and I was seeing it, I was thinking, what? Like, you know, seeing him fight Terrence Stamp and throwing him around and throwing him into billboards and, you know, with all the wind blowing the cars down the street. Mm-hmm, I mean, it was just brilliant. I loved it. Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Right. Let's move on to number three movie. And Lee, we'll just come back to you. What is your pick for the top 10?
Well, this is tough, man. I was hoping he was going to leave me till last. I'm going to go for my guilty pleasure. I'm going to go for Condor Man.
Condor Man. Right. Tell us about Condor Man.
Yeah. So, again, it's, I'm surprised you haven't heard it, actually, because it's actually a comic book. So, basically, he's a comic book writer. Mm-hmm. And he then designs his own costume and he becomes his comic book character, which fights crime. And then he flukily gets mixed up into this espionage, you know, and he goes abroad and he's just, he goes on an adventure and he's got his buddy with him. It's basically like he starts off as a comic book writer and then he becomes his comic book character, becomes a superhero.
I mean, it sounds familiar.
Car chases, there's speedboat chases. It's really good. Really good. I mean, I've not seen it in a long time, but I always remember as a kid that I'd be always watching that, had it on my cassette player. And it was just, over and over again, loved it. It's like a mixture of James Bond and superhero.
Yeah, I'm just checking out some of the posters and images and stuff like that. And it's like the name sounds familiar. It's not a film I've seen. Has anybody else seen Condor Man?
I have heard of it as well, but never seen it.
All right, cool. All right, Condor Man is on our list.
Yeah, because Michael Crawford, he was really big because he was he was in Some Mothers Do Have 'Em. And he was also played in The Phantom of the Opera, which I went to see him, and he was in that on the stage show in the West End back in the 80s. Okay. So, he was big at the time. So, yeah.
All right, cool. Right, Alex, what is your pick for the top 10?
All right, so next towards the top of my list is the John Carpenter classic, Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. Okay, so why have you picked that?
I just remember that, like, the first time I saw it, just the concept of, like, Manhattan just, like, being closed off to become a prison. Mm-hmm. Which is, never seen anything like that at that age. It's just like, that just sounds like awesome. Yeah, just like,
that's right, because basically they created New York, and they, because it was kind of separate on the island, they made that the prison, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah So, but no, the original was just great, man. Kurt Russell was just awesome. The character of Snake Plissken just became iconic with the eye patch and everything. It's just great 80s sort of action thriller fun, man. It's just yeah.
Okay, so yeah, for the listeners and viewers, if you haven't seen it, so it's set in 1997, which seems crazy now. So that there's a major war between the US and the Soviet Union, not so crazy when you think about it. And the entire island of Manhattan has been converted into a giant maximum security prison. So then Air Force One is hijacked and crashes into the island, and with the president on board, and he's taken hostage by a group of inmates. And so they take Snake Plissken. He is a former special forces soldier turned criminal. He's recruited to retrieve the president in exchange for his own freedom. So that's the kind of premise of the movie. Okay, so Sasha, Escape from New York, are you a fan? Oh, Sasha, you're on mute.
You're on mute.
So, right. Sasha, are you a fan of Escape from New York?
Of course, man. But it's my number three. It was my number two, but it's my number three. Escape from New York, man. You know what? Every video gamer likes this thing because it inspired one of the greatest video game series of all time, Metal Gear Solid. Mm-hmm. Main characters called Solid Snake and totally named for Plissken. More references to this film and that video game. Revolver Ocelot, who's one of the characters in the game, he's based on Lee Van Cleef, not the character, but the way he looks and everything out of The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. He looks just like how he looks like in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And okay. Yeah, it's such a sick game. But yeah, this movie inspired what was one of the key movies that inspired that game. And for another reference in that game is that in one of the latest sequels of that game series, Snake changes his name to Plissken as a code name. So yeah, hence Snake Plissken. Cool. But no, I love this film, and Kurt Russell doing the best Clint Eastwood impersonation ever put on celluloid film. I think it's really funny because in this film, in these two films, he's emulating Clint Eastwood's. And then you watch the other John Carpenter one he did, Big Trouble in China, and he's emulating John Wayne. So,
right, yeah, okay.
There's like a cowboy thing going on there. But back on this film, yeah, always loved it. Part of me, when I did, like, used to watch this is one of those films where I think would have made a really good as a, like, a remake. But The problem I have with that is that you just can't replace Russell. You can, but I always felt Russell was too young to be this living legend. You know, I think if they made it with him now and he'd been this guy with okay, he's in old age pensioner now. How old is he? Is he like 60 or 70?
Okay, Russell, I can do a quick check on that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, how old is he? If he's in his 60s, I could buy it a little better, but if he's in his 70s... No, nah, man.
72. Yeah, 72. It's a little bit old for him.
Yeah, we'll get his son.
Yeah.
Have you seen him in Soldier?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Soldier was good.
Yeah, yeah. Soldier, and he's also coming up in the Godzilla series on Apple. So, you know, maybe he's still got some action in him. Who knows? Okay, so, Amrita, have you seen Escape from New York?
No.
Okay. What? One to add to the list. And Lee, are you a fan of it? Have you seen it?
You should leave Satcha to the end. Stop asking me after Satcha.
Felicia's just like, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Thanks.
All right, cool. Right, Sasha, you are up, my friend. So what is your film you're adding to the top 10?
Oh, the film I'm adding to the top 10. Let's have a look. Okay, for me, Mad Max 2.
Mad Max 2. Okay.
Yeah. If there's any Mad Max that isn't the Tom Hardy latest amazing movie, it's definitely this OG. I like the first Mad Max, but it's not the one I go back to out of the three. It's always this mm-hmm. one. This movie okay. was fantastic. It inspired like a lot of stuff, like Fist of the North Star, and just about every other apocalyptic kind of thing, wasteland thing, and video games and movies and anime and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, it's just a great kind of like sci-fi fantasy kind of film, man. It's one of the greatest, and Mel in his prime, man.
Mm-hmm. So is that number two on your list? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fine.
Number all two right, on cool. my list. Mad Max
all 2. Right, Mad Max 2. Has anybody else seen it? Like it? Don't like it?
Yeah, it's on my list. Yeah. I've got it down at number six really on my cool. list. But yeah, no, it's on my top 10 list for sure.
All right, cool.
I'm really proud because I've never seen any Mad Max film.
Right, okay.
It's insane because I feel like it's right up my alley.
Not even Fury Road.
No, not even Fury Road. It's one that you and I have said we're going to watch loads and we've just never watched it.
Fury Road, I saw like 10 times at the cinema. Like,
yeah,
hands down.
Yeah, that'll be another one. That'll be another unpopular opinion. I don't like it.
I think it's a cinematic masterpiece of action cinema. It doesn't need a plot. It's all done visually. It's a visually stunning, crazy ride, man.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I hear.
All right, Mad Max. I know I've seen them all, but I have a trouble separate them which is which, because I think I've only ever seen them all once. It's just a franchise I've never revisited, really. So I can't comment on Mad Max 2. Don't really know much about it at all. Don't even remember what happens in that one. Then the only one I know is the one I remember most is the one with Tina Turner in it, so which is Thunderdome. But yeah. Okay, so we are coming back around again. So Amrita, do you have another pick for the top 10?
I do. This might be like an unconventional one, but I absolutely love it. And that is An American Werewolf in London.
Mm-hmm.
I love that film.
Okay.
As a fan of like someone who has kind of grown up like on and off liking horror and not liking horror. I love horror, what it is, but frequently I just find it really dull and not scary. I basically never get scared in a horror film. It's quite rare I get scared. And I think watching that really young, I don't know how old I was, I think it must have been about 7 or something when I watched it, and I remember just thinking, oh my gosh, like the effects kind of blew my mind at that time. Now obviously mm-hmm. looking back, they are nothing just compared to the kind of effects that we have.
Okay, did anyone else have this on their list?
Yeah, it's also my number four as well.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, it's just, so what do you guys like about it? What is Alex and Lee, what do you like about it?
For me, that transformation scene just can't be beat. You know, as much as, yeah, like, you know, effects and stuff have moved on, but you still, it still holds up, man. I'm sorry, but it does. Like, when the hand comes up and the fingers start stretching, it's just, it, you know.
It's horrific.
You know how it's done these days, and it, you know, and it's pretty simple, but it's still, it works, man. Simple as that.
It's also because it takes its time on that scene. Like, it doesn't it doesn't just like, oh, you know, the moon comes up and blah, that's it, he's a werewolf. Like, it really painfully destroys his body bit by bit. It's like it is quite a horrific scene to watch.
I think I remember seeing behind the scenes, like John Landis, the director, was saying about he wanted it to be like you say, not to be quick, and also to be like, obviously it's not daytime, but in bright light, hence the reason it's done like in the flat, in you know, with all the lights,
right? And stuff, yeah,
which is pretty different to how every other transformation's ever been done, because they need to usually hide the effect by making it dark.
Exactly.
Yes,
make it quick transitions, because obviously the effects are not up to par. So that alone.
You mean just... people aren't dogs all the time? No. Werewolves?
No, apparently not. Yeah, I just love the fact that, yeah, you know, again, I remember John Landis saying he wanted the werewolf to be like on all fours rather than, you know, like a guy in a suit on two legs and stuff. So it's just the fact that his body, you actually believe his body is changing shape, and yeah, the bones are cracking and the muscles are changing, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it just can't be
just like that. Is the film I think that set my love for things like fantasy in general, where I'm a big fan of things like, you know, modern stuff like Vampire Diaries and all of that nonsense. And I wouldn't like any of that if it wasn't for a film like this that really kind of brought that to life for me in my imagination. Literally, it was something I had never even imagined seeing, let alone actually seeing in a realistic way like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And not to mention, I think the story was just quite cool. It was just a really good film around.
Cool. Lee, any thoughts?
Yeah, echo what Alex said, really. The transformation scene was just brutal. It's, you know, again, we're watching it at such a young age. It's... It really did the job. But yeah, the whole film, really, the setting, you know, the lighting, everything about it. Yeah, it kind of just, it just reminisces in your brain all the, you know, years. And I haven't seen it in years, but I, you know, there's certain parts of that film that just are sort of buried in there, that kind of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, the same. I haven't watched it in years, and it's one that I probably need to revisit because it has been such a long time. But yeah, that change scene, it just, yeah, stays with you. Sasha, An American Werewolf in London. You seen it? You a fan?
Never seen it.
Never seen it. All right.
Never seen it.
Right. So we are back to the list, and let's have a little look. So I think it's my turn. I'm going to go for... something slightly different. I'm going to go for Arthur. So this is Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli. And for those people who don't know Dudley Moore, the reference probably will be from Friends when Phoebe cuts Monica's hair and she asks for it to be like Demi Moore, not Dudley Moore. But yeah, so Arthur is a happy drunk, and he's got no ambitions, but he's an heir to a vast fortune, which he is told he'll only get if he marries Susan. But he doesn't love Susan, but she will make something of him and what the family expects. Arthur proposes that he meets a girl with no money and whom he could easily fall in love. So it's sort of like rags and riches. It's yeah, ultimately it's the love story, but it's like a romantic comedy, I guess. And I remember really loving this when I grew up, and I watched it a few times. Again, not a film that I've watched for many, many years, but one that's kind of stuck with me. And I suppose we've had many variations of it since, like Boosters Millions and Adam Sandler doing his version of it and all that kind of stuff. So there's been very, you know, incarnations of it, but that was one of the early ones, which I really enjoyed. So I've got Arthur on my list. Anybody else seen Arthur? Any other love for Arthur?
I don't think I've ever... I've definitely seen clips and bits of it, so I kind of have I probably think I've seen it and have a vague memory of it, but I'm pretty sure I've not seen it like all the way through.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen it, and when you first said the name, I immediately went to like Arthur as in Sword in the Stone.
Right, okay, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Lee, Sasha, are you there? You watched Arthur?
No, I've never seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it a long time ago, so I couldn't tell you exactly how it plans out. But you know, Dudley Moore is quality. He was a good actor.
Comedy gold. All right. So we'll see. There's not many people who've seen it, so it might end up coming off the list. But who are we going to next? Is it Lee? I think it's your turn. Yeah, Lee, what have you got?
Between two of them. I'll go for the Cannonball Run.
So tell us about that.
It's Burt Reynolds. It's got a big cast: Roger Moore, Farrah Fawcett, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Jackie Chan. Basically, it's a bit like Rat Race. So you've got supercars, All different types of cars. It's very fast paced, escaping from the, you know, it's basically this competition. They're all trying to win. I can't remember if it's got to be prize money that they're after, but everybody's in on it. They're all trying to screw each other over along the way. You know, it's lots of comedy, lots of action. It's just good fun, really. Yeah, no, it's really cool.
I
rewatched many times
it was really successful at the box office. I know that, but it's actually one that I've never seen. I'm not sure why, because like you say, it's packed with people. Any other love for the Cannonball Run?
I think I've seen it like once when I was really young, but I don't remember a single thing like it, to be honest with you.
Amrita, Sasha, have either of you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times. Jackie Chan's first attempt at Hollywood. It wasn't something that I kept rewatching though. To be honest, I do remember it when I was a kid, but yeah.
I've never seen it, but given my love for Rat Race, because that is probably one of my favorite ensemble comedies, I will probably check this out now.
They got a sequel, Cannonball Run 2.
There is Cannonball Run 2. Didn't do quite as well, but yeah. I'm going to check this out because, again, it's one that I've always heard of. I need to add it to my list. And that's why we're here. Because
Roger Moore in one of them? Because I think it's Moore's
he's in the first one.
I was in the first one. I think that was the first film he did post. No, it's not post-Bond. It's while he was Bond, I think.
Right, because it would have been 81, so
there's something about him being at the time.
Okay, so Alex, what is your pick for the next film?
Same year.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see if anyone picks that, if it makes the list for Your Eyes Only. Alex, what's your next pick?
Okay, next one for me is a film I used to watch all the time as a kid, Clash of the Titans. Was it Sam Worthington, I think, the remake?
Yeah, exactly. Sam Worthington. I didn't even know this film existed, and it was on Neil's list. And so I looked it up and I was like, oh, right, I'm surprised about this. For the people who don't know what Clash of the Titans is, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Of what I can remember. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's ancient Greek gods. You've got Zeus, you've got, you know, monsters like the Medusa and all that kind of stuff. Perseus is, if I remember correctly, I think it's a bit like the Hercules character. So I think he's like half human, half god, or something like that. And goes on wild adventures. The thing as a kid, it's that stop motion special effects was just great.
Right, with the monsters. Right. Okay.
Medusa comes out, you know, every single like snake on the head is moving and stuff. It was just, you know, as a kid, I just remember watching it way too many times.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just having a look. So Sir Laurence Olivier, he was Zeus. Dame Maggie Smith, she was in it. She was Thetis. So yeah, no, we've got a bit of a cast on it. So anybody else seen this movie? Because I hadn't heard of it before today.
Alex has told me that it's he says it needs to be fixed, so that's on my list.
Right, go on, Lee. What were you saying?
No, it was going to be that. It was going to be that or Cannonball Run. I went with Cannonball Run.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but I used to watch this religiously as well. It was brilliant. Yeah, I remember having people around watching it. Yeah, the models. You know, because it was all animation. Like a lot of the characters, it's all animated. So it was. It was brilliant. Well, like the villains and that was a lot of animation. But yeah, no, the cast was really good.
Cool.
No, good adventure.
Yeah, Sasha, have you seen it?
A few moments later.
Hello?
Sasha?
Sorry.
Have you seen Clash of the Titans?
Yeah, that's on my list.
It's on my list.
It's my number 9.
All right.
Cool. Yeah, man. That was a good one, man.
Swashbuckling adventures. All right.
Much better than a short remake that they made.
I remember the that's the Clash of the Titans I know, but yeah, okay. Right, Sasha, what is your pick? So this will be the last film for our list until we start debating them. So what's your pick?
Oh, this is hard, man. What am I putting in next?
Oh, the suspense.
I know.
This is because I've got a bit of a list and I've got now. You know what? Because Neil's not here and nobody said it. The Evil Dead.
Right. So I'm going to counter that. So The Evil Dead is classified as 1981. It had its premiere in 81, sorry, but it didn't get a theatrical release until 83. So it doesn't qualify for 81 for us. So that can be pushed to a future episode.
Okay. All right.
I had to do my homework on that because it's listed as 81, but when I was looking at all the box office numbers, there was nothing for 81. I couldn't figure out why. I think it might have been released in Detroit for like a few screenings only, but it didn't have a full release. So yes, that one doesn't qualify for this, but otherwise it would have been a good show. So what's your other pick?
Okay. So my other pick will be, you know what? I'm going to stick with stuff I've watched over and over. For Your Eyes Only.
For Your Eyes Only. Someone did it.
We have to put old Rog in there, man. Roger Moore as James Bond. You know what? People give this guy a hard time, man. I like Roger Moore as James Bond. He had more fun in that role than any of those guys. He made James Bond cool, man. He made him funny. He didn't make him creepy. Well, okay, maybe the later ones, but you know, like he still was kind of like, you know what I mean? He was cool about it, man. Like, I don't know. I like.
I think we've got a soft spot for him because obviously he's Bond as we grew up, right? So he's our Bond.
First Bond movie I saw was, I think, with Roger Moore. So,
Plus this one, you got the chase in the Beetle. You got the start. You got the very start where he's in the helicopter across Westminster Bridge, and then Blofeld gets the remote control and tries to kill him, and he's locked in the helicopter and that. And that's the last time you ever see Blofeld until they reboot it for the Daniel Craig franchise, because obviously they lost the rights to Spectre and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then what else is in this one? This is one of the many times they whoop out.
Jim Moore have the best villains.
This was the one where they whoop out the James Bond theme tune, where it has that 70s twang. Even though it's no longer the 70s, it's the 80s, but like still. And then you've got, what's it? You've got the ski chase in there that Christopher Nolan ripped off and put into Inception. And then you got there's so much stuff in this film, man. And it's one of the better Roger Moore ones because it's more for espionage kind of film as well.
I was going to say, because it's directed by John Glenn, and it's the first of his five. He directed five James Bond movies.
Yeah, that's right. He did it all the way up to License to Kill.
Yeah,
or Living Daylight.
And this was after Moonraker, the producers were quite conscious they wanted it to be back more to traditional Bond, like more espionage, a bit more grounded, because Moonraker went a bit more fantastical in that sense. So it was very much kind of bringing that character back down to
Earth, Fast and Furious
in every reality. Exactly. Yeah, went a bit Fast and Furious. It did. But yeah, no, For Your Eyes Only.
Hey, when that, Bond that went really to space, it was better, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it was better. Yeah. He did it better. Absolutely.
It was better.
He did it better back in 81. Right, For Your Eyes Only. Okay, so that makes up our top 10. So what we'll do is we're going to go around and everyone can voice other films that they had in their lists. And if there's anything we want to replace, which you think should be in there, we'll do that. So we've got Raiders of the Lost Ark, Superman 2, Condor Man, Escape from New York, Mad Max 2, Road Warrior. We've got An American Werewolf in London, Arthur, The Cannonball Run, Clash of Titans, or the Titans, and For Your Eyes Only. I'm just going to shout out Neil and Greg's lists so they give a voice. So Neil had Superman 2. He also had Clash of the Titans. He had Evil Dead, but I've ruled it out because, like I said, it didn't get theatrical release until 83. Raiders of the Lost Ark. He had Scanners. I didn't know what movie this was. It was directed by David Cronenberg, starring Michael Ironside. And it's the tag on the poster is 4 billion people on Earth, 237 are scanners. And it's basically a scientist trains a man with advanced telepathic ability called scanning to stop a dangerous scanner using his powers. So it's like a war between them. It's kind of a horror sci-fi movie. The tagline is "Their thoughts can kill." I watched the trailer to kind of get an understanding what it was. It's very much just a scene of one guy blowing another guy's head up, and I was like, "Oh, okay." So yeah, that's what this film is. So I'm intrigued to see it. Definitely.
Trust Neil.
Trust Neil, exactly. He's also got Escape from New York, An American Werewolf in London, Mad Max 2, Halloween 2. No one's mentioned that. It's an okay sequel, and then The Howling. So again, I didn't know about this either. So this is obviously before Twilight, but it's another American Werewolf themed horror movie. So it's based off a series of books called The Howling, and they turn it into a movie. Again, haven't seen it. Greg then gave me his list. So he had Raiders of the Lost Ark. He said, still one of the greatest films and an introduction to a legend before later diminishing returns. Then he had Time Bandits. Weird, bizarre, and disturbing at times. Still watched ridiculous number of times. So I had to look this up because I wasn't aware of what Time Bandit was. But it's directed by Terry Gilliam, who did 12 Monkeys and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's a young boy accidentally joins a band of time-traveling dwarves as they jump from era to era looking for treasure to steal. It's got quite a cast. It's got Sean Connery as King Agamemnon.
Yeah, it's a good cast.
Shelley Duvall from The Shining is Dame Pansy. You've got John Cleese as Robin Hood. Ian Holm as Napoleon. It's got Michael Palin, David Warner, Kenny Baker. It's got quite a stacked list. I was like, okay, I'm probably going to have to check this film out. That's one to add to the list. He also had American Werewolf in London. Earns his ranking for groundbreaking makeup by Rick Baker, which still holds up today. And then this is one that nobody mentioned, but it was on my list, but I didn't pick it for the top 10. Escape to Victory, or Victory, as it's called in some territories. So this is an Allied POWs prepared for a soccer game from the German national team to be played in Nazi-occupied Paris. The French resistance and British officers are making plans for the team's escape. So it's not quite accurate history, but it's kind of not necessarily a classic war film, but it's a guilty pleasure. It's got Michael Caine, Sylvester Stallone, and Pelé. So that's and Bobby Moore. That's a hell of a cast.
It was the football's great escape.
Yeah, it was, yeah, basically like Mean Machines and stuff like that. So it's in that vein. But yeah, Sylvester Stallone, Michael Caine, and Pelé, and Bobby Moore. So I've not actually seen that version, so I'm gonna have to check this out as well. He also had For Your Eyes Only, far from the best Bond, but I love Roger Moore era and I'm a Bond fanatic. He has Superman 2, a worthy sequel long before comic book movies were their current behemoth. He also had Scanners. I won't lie, I generally tried to explode some kids' heads. So that was a thing. He also had The Howling, creepy horror plus copious nudity, which was fun for a kid in the pre-internet Littlewood catalog days. Love Greg. He also had Arthur, amazing performances in the Rags to Riches story. Great theme tune also, and he had Road Warrior, Mad Max 2. Again, worthy sequel, though Thunderdome would ultimately eclipse it. So obviously he prefers Thunderdome. So they were their lists. Alex Amrita, did you have any other films that we haven't mentioned at all?
So I also had Time Bandits on there.
Okay.
The only other thing that I've got which has not been mentioned is Blowout by Brian De Palma with
Travolta. Was Blowout 81? I would have straight up had that one. You know what? That's going on my list because I had to take out.
I found it on its own in 81, but you can fact check it. If it's not, I can happily take it off.
I saw it
on let's have a look. Box Office Mojo. No, looks like it was 81. Yeah, July 24th, 1981. Yeah. So, that counts.
It's not one I've seen in a very, very long time, but I remember seeing it and was like,
I've not seen it.
That is going straight on my list, bro. It's a high tier film, man. I love Blowout. Yeah. John Travolta. Okay. Who else is it? Is it John Lithgow or is it assassin? That film was sick. That's one of the Palmer's greatest films he's ever made, man. I love that film.
Okay. So the synopsis is: a movie sound recordist accidentally records the evidence that proves that a car accident was actually murder, and consequently finds himself in danger. So, all right, this is one to watch. So, hey, this is what we're about, finding movies to watch.
Like, as I was researching for this film, like this decade, this year, I kept seeing this name popping up. So I was looking into the synopsis as well. And I'm now determined to watch this as well, because it seems a bit Nightcrawler-y.
Okay. It's got Nancy Allen in it as well from RoboCop.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
On mine, I literally had two others, which I've not mentioned. One is it's Thief, basically. Thief? Which was like a jewelry heist for the mob that ends up going wrong. And the mob don't want to let the guy go. I really like
Michael Mann film. Okay, James Caan, Jim Belushi. Okay.
Yeah. It kind of started a lot of my interest in like the gangster kind of thriller genre vibes. Mm-hmm. So I love that film. I haven't seen it in years, but it was always a fond one. And then my second one that I haven't mentioned yet is just a personal favourite, The Fox and the Hound.
Respect for that choice. What? Absolutely. That's in my top 10.
That is my number 10.
Yeah, it's in my top 10.
My list, man. Number 10.
I absolutely love that film. I love it.
Okay. We'll have to see if there's some debates then. We might have to replace some of these films. We'll see. Lee, what were some of the other films that you had?
To be honest, they were all the mentions. Time Bandits was on mine. Yep. And For Your Eyes Only and Escape to Victory. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sasha, what film are there any films that we haven't mentioned on your list?
Yeah, so I'll just say my list.
Yeah, read through your top 10, yeah.
Cool. So Fox and the Hound number 10, Clash of the Titans number 9, The Time Bandits number 8. Stripes, Bill Murray's Stripes. You guys ever see that? That wasn't mentioned.
I haven't, no? But I know it was a big hit that year. Yeah.
Okay, that's him and Harold Ramis before Ghostbusters, directed by Ivan Reitman, that did Ghostbusters. It's pretty funny. There's no ghosts, but yeah, they're in the army, and Bill Murray's mm-hmm. being his usual self, and craziness is kind of afoot. The best way I can say it is like kind of like an army version of Police Academy, except with Murray.
And it's got John Candy as well, right?
I think so. I can't remember. It's been mm-hmm. a while since I've seen it.
Yeah.
So 9, 8, 7. Number 6, Superman 2. Number 5, For Your Eyes Only. Number 4, Escape from New York. Number 3, Mad Max 2. Number 2, Justin, Blowout. And number 1, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. It was a quick. No, because, like, look, out of those. Blowout's up there. That's top tier. I'm sorry. It's that good.
Okay. So we've obviously mentioned a few films which you all guys had on your list, but they're not on here. So do we go back and have a look at those? So I've heard Time Bandits mentioned by a lot of you. Obviously Blowout, Alex had it, Sasha had it. Do either of those kind of movies make the list? I'll go through the list again. We've got Raiders, Superman 2, Condor Man, Escape from New York, Mad Max 2, An American Werewolf in London, Arthur, The Cannonball Run, Clash of Titans, and For Your Eyes Only. Do any of those need to come off the list?
As for someone that hasn't seen a lot of these films but has now heard about them today, I feel like Blowout should replace something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Blowout should.
All right, so I think the two that are probably up for debate, we've got Condor Man and Arthur. So which of those two would we replace with Blowout? I have to take your steer on this because I haven't seen it.
I can't remember either of those films. So,
and yeah, you can replace Condor Man with Time Bandits.
Yeah, so we're going to replace. Okay, so we're going to replace Condor Man with Time Bandits, and then we're going to replace Arthur with Blowout.
Yeah. Okay. I'm cool with it.
And what about The Fox and the Hound?
Nah, see, that's where I was coming to. If it's on everyone's list, why is it on this list? What is going on?
Exactly.
I'm going to say something blasphemous. I can't take off Superman 2.
I'll take off for your. I can take off For Your Eyes Only. I can take off Clash of Titans, but I don't know if I can't. No, I can't take off Superman 2. Nah. Or Mad Max 2, I take off because I can't care less about that movie. So
what? No, that's a cardinal sin. If you take off Mad Max 2 for Fox and the Hound, I might not ever smell again on a podcast.
All right. Is anyone willing to give anything up for the Fox and the Hound?
I said Supes 2. I'm saying, like, it's not the Donner Cut.
I don't care. Something we all have anyway. So I feel like my two were. Solitude.
Okay.
I'm not willing for that though, but you know.
All right, we'll leave it there then. We'll leave it there. So Fox and the Hound is a number 11.
So it gets a little like
Okay. But see, it's not gonna make the top 10 of Disney. Although it's such a great film, it won't.
Change the episode to the top 11.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, it's an honorable mention. Honorable mention. Okay, so our new list, no particular order, but definitely number one, we have Raiders of the Lost Ark, we have Superman 2, we have Time Bandits, we have Escape from New York, Mad Max 2, An American Werewolf in London, Blowout, The Cannonball Run, Clash of Titans, and For Your Eyes Only. Okay, there we go. So that is our Creative Control top 10 movies of 1981. Good list. It's a good list. It is a good list. And there's loads here that I want to go watch for the first time and that I need to go back and watch again. So Blowout, I think, is probably going to be my number one. The way that if Sasha loves it that much, I know I'm going to like it. So I need to, and Alex as well. So I need to go see that film. That's probably going to be my first one I'll go watch. And then probably Time Bandits, because that just sounds like that sounds fun. Okay, well, that's it. So guys, listeners, viewers, tell us what you thought. Did we make the right choices? Are there any films released in 81 that we haven't mentioned or didn't make the list that you would have swapped out? Tell us what we did wrong, tell us what we did right. Thank you very much, and as always, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube, and make sure you follow us on any podcast platform that you're listening to us on. Ladies and gents, is there anything else that you want to mention before we go today?
So if you're into retro gaming, please check out AntStream Arcade. It's a retro gaming streaming service that offers over 1,500 games online to play, all retro from PlayStation 1 and below. And the library is expanding every week, every Tuesday, with two new games and one new challenge a week. Challenges are part of FanStream's little thing. They take old games, they make brand new content and challenges, like high school challenges and that kind of thing for people to play. There's online tournaments, so you can go and compete against other players around the world. And they have online leaderboards on all the games and all the tournaments and all the stuff, so you can compete with other players. It just released on Xbox, so you can play it on Xbox, you can play it on your PC, you can play it on your mobile phone, and you can play it on the web. If you have an Apple, I recommend using the web version, as there's no current app on anything Apple just yet, but could be something that's in the pipeline in the future. Definitely check us out, and enjoy playing those retro games like Double Dragon and Samurai Showdown, and lots of SNK games, because they do have a big selection of SNK games from Japan that didn't necessarily make it to these. So if you're a hardcore retro gamer and you know what I'm talking about, they got some good stuff.
It's a fantastic app. Like I say, it's retro gaming on the go. I've got the app on my mobile from the Play Store. Like you say, you can use it, you can check out, you can access it from a browser, anstream.com. Go for it. And the great thing about the challenges is once you challenge it, you can actually challenge a friend and you can ping them a message, and they'll get that email notification to say, you know, I've got three from Sasha. Sasha has challenged you. And good fun. So,
yeah, thanks for watching and thanks for listening. And until next time, peace out.
Cheers, man.